whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app. Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
It's a great question.
That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
You want LeBron James?
No.
Why not?
He's too old.
You only get just for 1 year.
Right.
I'm not going to answer that.
Tell me how that'll work.
Appreciate it.
You going to trade like 5 guys for LeBron James?
No. I mean, he makes the same exact amount of all the guys in Brooklyn that everybody wants today.
I don't want all 3 of those guys.
You don't?
No, not all 3.
That's the word.
They want all 3.
No, yes, that's who's available. I don't know that they'll do it, but
yeah. I just want the 1.
You just want Schroeder?
That's right.
That's your bar is too low.
Cam Thomas, no thank you, ball dominant. Cam Johnson, too expensive. There's going to be a lot of teams who want Cam Johnson.
Maybe not that expensive. Also, we'll get to that. Let's go out to the River Islands guest line. It's time for Clear to Play. Take you inside the tent. Get you updated on the latest injuries in the Bay. Proud to partner with UCSF Health on this segment. Bring in Professor of Orthopedic Surgery, Dr. Nirav Pandya. We checked. The salaries match, and Doc is allowed to come on the show. It does not mean we have equal salaries. Hi, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Let's tell us about Isaac Garendo's foot. A foot sprain and then football 4 days later. Your thoughts?
So I think in general, you know, the main things you worry about with a foot sprain, number one, you want to rule out the bad Lisfranc injuries, and you want to rule out the turf toes. And then if you rule those things out, then typically it becomes an issue of how can you do in terms of pain relief? Is there any mobility issues? Is there any stiffness? With a full week, that typically most foot sprains can get better, but with, you know, 72 to 96 hours from Sunday to Thursday, the limiting factor may simply be he's got too much soreness and pain, and it's hard for him to be effective. Not that it's going to cause more injury, but he's just not going to be able to play at that position. I think it's part of the position and the short turnaround that makes this hard for him.
What sort of a pain management from an injection standpoint could you use and utilize for Garendo in the foot?
You know, if it's related to like a specific joint, or there's maybe like one tendon or one particular ligament that may be, you know, in a very specific area, you can do some cortisone in that area. But if it's more global, like you've got multiple tendons and just your foot just generally hurts, then it's difficult. Then you talk about taping, bracing, and hopefully putting on a stiffer sneaker would help. But hopefully if it is something more isolated to one particular area or a joint, then yeah, there are things that you can inject to help make the pain better without worrying about, you know, is there something structurally wrong?
We'll see if Dre Greenlaw plays. If so, what is the right way to sort of re-indoctrinate someone after an Achilles injury, and what should fans expect in terms of his performance?
I think in general, you would definitely limit the number of plays that he has. He just hasn't recreated that full explosiveness, unpredictable nature. You just can't do that in the practice setting. So I think, number one, with someone who's coming off that type of injury, you probably limit the number of snaps. And number two, I think timing's going to be off. I think the biggest thing that people talk about when they come back from that Achilles is they suddenly have to make a sudden movement. They have to react very quickly, and there's that fear that that's going to happen again. So it's going to take several plays to him to feel confident that that Achilles is not going to kind of have that issue again. That's what you commonly hear with these athletes. So I think maybe a little bit of timing issue, maybe a little less power. But as he gets further along game after game, hopefully that confidence comes back. He's more comfortable coming off that surgery.
Nick Bosa's missed a small handful of games with the oblique issue. What do you expect to see come Thursday as far as Nick Bosa being able to return or not?
I think it's really just based on how he's feeling. And I think that, you know, he's had enough time for, you know, a general and oblique injury to heal from a structural standpoint. I think the hard thing is that if he's having a little bit of soreness or can't twist or can't really kind of stabilize himself, then it's really a game time decision for him. And even though things may be structurally healed, if there's a little bit of soreness or he just doesn't feel confident, then it's another week. So once again, that how he feels leading up to Wednesday, Thursday are really going to determine whether he plays or not.
Doc, can we revisit something on Brock Purdy? I was just forever interested when you said that shoulder could be sort of related potentially to what happened to the elbow a couple of seasons ago. Now he reports, no, I feel fine. He looked good throwing the ball the other day. Does that kind of calm all of your fears, or is this something still to monitor?
I think it does calm my fears. I mean, in general, like, he may have just simply could have been sore, could have taken some impact on that area. So I think the fact that he turned around and has looked good and there's not any kind of lingering issues, you're not hearing about an MRI showing some rotator cuff and labral issue, I think it's a very good sign. And I think because he had that elbow injury, when you hear shoulder, you get a little bit more concerned. But let's just say he was another quarterback that didn't have an elbow issue and you heard shoulder soreness, you'd be like, oh, fine, not a big deal. Let's just keep going. So the fact that he's turned it around this quickly is a positive sign. Typically, larger structural issues will continue to linger. Just taking a couple weeks off wouldn't necessarily help that.
Double short week here for the Rams and the Niners, but how much worse is it on the body to have a short week here in December as opposed to back in September?
I think it's much worse. I mean, you typically need, as the season goes on, more and more time to get your body ready for a game. I mean, in general, even just muscle soreness, fatigue, the normal kind of aches and pains take 72 to 96 hours. And then you have these lingering injuries and things that these players have. So suddenly you're going from Sunday, turning around playing on Thursday. So it really is, can people push through? How much discomfort do they have? And where you really see it is you don't necessarily see, and they've studied this, injuries on Thursday. But then you look at the next couple of weeks, and then you start seeing people break down. So having a short turnaround at the end of the season is worrisome. Hopefully everyone comes out healthy and there aren't any major injuries leading in the next couple of weeks.
Doc, what's your read on the Andrew Wiggins ankle situation?
Yeah, this kind of diagnosis of ankle impingement, really what that is something, whether it's inflammation, it can be scar tissue, sometimes it can be bone spurs. It's kind of this grab bag term for there's something in the ankle joint that's causing him to potentially have decreased mobility and have pain. The vast majority of athletes, that usually comes from sort of repetitively playing, and he's kind of, you know, that type of player who's going to do that very explosive. The fact that they're kind of giving him a little spot rest makes me think this is probably more just an inflammation issue as opposed to there being a bone spur or something else that's causing that mobility to go down. So something to watch. I mean, it is, you know, a little bit worrisome that something like this is cropping up earlier in the season, but hopefully they're just being very cautious. They're using that term kind of more loosely, and hopefully he'll be back because he's been such a critical part of the season and kind of going back to that 2022 performance that he had.
Steph missed a game with the bilateral knee tendonitis. Then he came back and looked pretty good. What's your concern level for Steph, not only in the short term, but throughout the year having to deal with this knee tendonitis?
Yeah, not super concerned about it. I mean, I think for him, if there's any athlete that takes care of his body, understands the rehab process, understands how to kind of work on things like that, it's Curry. And, you know, even though you put the ankle issues aside, because that's more of a structural issue that became more chronic, besides having these random traumatic injuries or like an MCL or a foot sprain, Curry really hasn't had those degenerative type issues that would crop up at this age. So the fact that this is kind of this really his first issue that comes with potentially playing a lot and kind of the wear and tear, it's a good sign. The good news is that for him at his position, not a lot of repetitive jumping, not banging in the pain a lot. I think it's going to be a lot of load management and him kind of managing this more than it being kind of a warning sign, like an Achilles tendonitis or something else that you get in someone who's younger, like a Christian McCaffrey.
Doc, great stuff as always, and we thank you, my friend.
No problem. Take care, guys. Have a good one.
There he goes. Doc Pandia. The proceeding was sponsored by UCSF Health. All right. Warrior Trade Talk is on tap for sure. And we're going to throw out a few deals. And again, not necessarily the specifics of them, but the names that are being thrown around for sure. We're going to get into this coming up next. Would love to hear from you on which deal makes sense to you at 888-957-9570. Just to kind of clean this up, though, the Debo situation that we've been talking about, Jason in Redwood City wants to weigh in. Hi, Jason. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, thanks to you guys for having me. I think this Debo situation has been completely blown out of control. We're just coming off a Super Bowl loss, and I think there's so much high expectation for this team and all the injuries we had and all the drama and stuff like that. I think if we could sneak into the playoffs, I don't think any team would want to see us. I'm very confident in Kyle Shanahan, despite all these trade rumors, all the stuff going on. I think if we could sneak in there, get some luck on our side, we'll be able to make some noise and at least return the NFC Championship game, honest opinion.
At least, right, Jason? I mean, like, I hear what you're saying, but it sounds to me like you're glossing over the assignment that is still ahead of them here in the regular season.
Definitely intimidating for sure, but I mean, you have to stay faithful, right? We've had so much success over the past few years, and everybody's worried. But I think Kyle, he has to get in his bag, and I think he will. I think we'll definitely get to the playoffs. And if not, well, I think we still have one more year. So,
Jason, thanks. Appreciate it. I don't think anybody's blowing it out of proportion. We're sitting here having a conversation. We've repeatedly said this is not a huge deal, but it's completely fair. It is on these players to handle the frustration and not have it go a different direction. And Deebo Samuel, whether it was Tabor Pepper's fault, Deebo's fault, or whatever, the shoving on the sideline, they had to have a conversation afterwards. Now there's tweets. Now they've got to all answer questions about the tweets. He goes to delete the tweets. Nobody's making a big deal out of it, but it's a deal,
right?
It's a thing. Boy, if anybody made a big deal out of it, it was Mark Schlereth, and he was asked the question in this format: how would you feel if you were a teammate and he's played in the league?
Yeah. And he said he'd be pissed off and he would love to see all these players go in there and play guard, which is what he played, play guard for one practice and have Rydell, the name of the helmet, which I love, the old school helmet, the old Rydell helmet, have Rydell pushed in your face all practice long, and then we'll see how much appreciation you have for exactly what it is you get to do as a wide receiver while all the big uglies are in the trenches doing all the dirty work for you.
We're sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The Warrior trades that are, I don't know, being discussed at least, are coming up. And also, one other 49er thing. Of all the stuff we've been talking about, there's the Deebo, there's what Kyle said, there's what Purdy said. When do we hear what Fred Warner said with regard to the indication that they've not been playing with urgency until Sunday? You're going to want to hear this from Fred. It's next on Willard and Dibs.
What are you asking exactly? I'm still confused by your question.
Now, back to
Willard and Dibs
on 95.7 The Game.
You want to hear what Fred Warner has to say about the Niners not playing with a sense of urgency?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds to me, well, we'll play it.
Okay.
I think you might have taken,
you're teasing me now.
Well, I think you might have taken offense to the concept.
Possibly.
I don't think it's like, George, you're wrong. I just think that, again, people say things and then we try to interpret what's going on. And I think that the interpretation in some way may have offended Fred Warner. You tell me. Take a listen. This is Fred Warner on all of the talk about the Niners not being desperate until last Sunday against the Bears.
I know there's been talk about desperation around the building ever since that game this past Sunday. I haven't really talked about it much because I felt like that was already like the feeling the last few weeks. It just hadn't really come together like you wanted it to. I think it just really showed through and through all three phases. When you do execute and you win in a big way like we did on Sunday, then all of a sudden that's going to be what everybody's talking about. But I don't want it to get lost that like we didn't go out there in Green Bay, we didn't go out there in Buffalo saying, oh, let's just hope that we win. Like, trust me, I felt desperate as hell going into both those games. It just didn't work out. And then, you know, you keep working hard, keep chopping wood, carrying water, and then all of a sudden you get into a game and things, you know, finally look the way they're supposed to look. And it didn't happen just because last week we just, like, all of a sudden decided we want to. This was weeks in the making.
Okay. All right. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, it's one thing for him to say it, and I believe it, but then you watch the way they played against Buffalo and Green Bay, and it didn't look like they had the same level of urgency that they did on Sunday. So, and I thought when George Kittle said what he said, I did feel like a little bit of that was directed at the defense, even though he was quick to say, I'm not pointing fingers and I'm not naming names. Well, what I've seen from the defense is less of urgency and less of a forceful defense. And then you watch the game on Sunday and just put on the tape of the opening Bears drive for the first couple of drives. Those dudes are flying all over the place trying to hurt people.
Well, I think there's an underrated thing that happened on Sunday, and it's the return of Talanoa Hufanga. I think that there are things that happen because the safety is exactly that. He's the free safety. He is back there. He is the last line of defense. He can see things. And by the way, that secondary around him, very young. He's still very young.
Yeah.
But like incredibly young with the likes of Mustafa and Renardo Green out there. And I think that they needed a little bit of direction that Jair Brown, quite frankly, is either too young or ineffective in doing. And so it just looked to me like assignments were being handled better. That's what it looked like to me. And so from Fred's standpoint, here's what I think about that. It's really hard for us as people when someone says, like, I bet we all do this. You tell me, Dibs, if this is how you kind of react to this. Boss comes into a room, any workplace. Boss comes into a room and says, hey, we need to do a better job of blank. What's the first thing that goes through your head?
Well, I'm doing blank.
Exactly.
It must be Willard.
You and me.
Willard's not doing blank.
Right. You ain't doing blank.
He ain't doing blank.
That's how we think.
Yep.
So Fred, like any other human being, is like, George, are you talking about me? And I tried to say this on Monday. This was my reaction to George. I don't know if I'm right, but I feel like what George was talking about was not this tangible thing that you can hold in your hand. It's not like, oh, there's a sense of urgency, and number 54 didn't have it, and yeah, number 77.
54 does have it.
It's just Fred Warner. Right, it's this thing. It's this thing. Did you feel it or you don't feel it? You've been in relationships before.
Yeah.
Some weeks, you're feeling it.
Yeah.
Some weeks, you ain't feeling it.
No.
And that's not directed at one person. It's the whole collective for whatever reason, and it can be really hard to sort of put a finger on it. So that's what me as a 49er fan, I would prefer that the conversation from George doesn't go there. I mean, you even asked me yesterday, who do you think he's talking about? I don't think he's talking about anybody. I think he's talking about the room.
The collective.
The room did not feel urgent.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Well, and you can look across the board at things that didn't happen on Sunday and look at the offensive line. They didn't commit a lot of penalties. I don't know if they committed any penalties. False starts. I know Dominic Pooney, he had the one false start, I believe, but the offensive line, they played a clean game, and the skill guys didn't drop the football, and the running backs ran with force. And the one thing, Mark, that stood out to me more than anything else was that the defense played downhill. The defense, even on the play where Swift absolutely pulverized Malik Mustafa. You remember the hit where Mustafa comes in, and he tries to just put a hit on Swift, but Swift had the lower ground. He had the leverage, and he popped it right into Mustafa. He had come in and tried to put a lick on. The defense was playing a lot more forcefully.
Well, for me, this is like Thursday night, and my apologies if it sounds like we say this every week, but Thursday night for me,
it's a must-win, Mark.
It's the witching hour.
The witching hour.
It is. Where losses become wins, and wins become losses. If you don't speak red zone, my bad. But those of you who speak red zone know what I'm talking about. It's for multiple reasons. It's not just, it's a division opponent, you get back to 500, all that. That's all true. And I think that like any realistic shot at this thing is dead if the Niners don't win Thursday night. And if they do win Thursday night, it becomes very realistic that the Niners can still get involved in all of this. You know, like, even if it's a wild card, don't forget, you don't have to catch Seattle. Maybe you just catch Washington. They're 8-5 also. Like, there's a way in for the 49ers. You have to win Thursday, but it's not just that. From Nick Sorensen not trying to blitz, from the young secondary getting torched, all of these things, you are now being challenged by a Super Bowl champion veteran quarterback and his full complement of very talented receivers with a running back behind him who, quite frankly, scares the hell out of me.
And he should, because he gashed you last time you played him.
You need to stop that group. If you can, I will believe that you're real. If you can't, this was all fluff in the wind.
Yeah, it's over. It's over.
But it's not even just that. It's like you weren't, like, all my points are wrong. oh, you're actually good. Your record just doesn't show it. No, no. You have to be able to do this. And so this idea of, oh, they're back, that's what the defense needed to look like. Do it to the Rams. I know they're just 7-6, but the Rams, this is a real offense now that's really going to challenge the depth of your secondary. And if you can do it, I will believe that you are still a playoff-level team in the NFC.
And even if you win, it's not as simple as, you know, the division or Washington, the wild card, because there's other teams out there, such as Atlanta, a team that's fading, but if they win, they'd also be 7-7. So there are other teams that could rise up and make it more difficult.
Sure.
I don't think that 9-8 gets it done as a wild card. I think the wild card is going to need to be 10-7.
Probably.
So if you wind up 9-8, your only route might be the division, and at that point, you'd need a lot of help. So it feels like 10-7 is going to be the record that you're going to need to even have a chance at the wild card, let alone win the division.
I mean, I guess put it this way, and this is getting way ahead of ourselves, and so it's stupid, I get it, but this is just the way that my heart will feel. If you can slow this offense down, then I will believe that you have a shot on a Monday night at home against Detroit.
Yeah, well, I mean, any given Sunday, right. Monday.
The NFL, Detroit is just scraping wins out right now. They're amazing, but they're challenged, right? Like, they're not unbeatable.
They're challenged, but nobody's
unbeatable.
They squeaked one out with 34 points on the board.
Right, so, and then they squeaked one out over the Bears with 23 points on the board while the Bears just watched the game go away for no reason.
Pretty much. Yeah, that was on Thanksgiving,
right? Yeah, right. It was the Bears' previous game before this one.
Yeah.
I'm just like, we've learned our lesson. The teams don't look the same every week.
No, of course not.
Someone asked me, how the hell are you going to slow the Rams down after what they did on Sunday? Well, they're not going to look like that.
Well, they might look better.
Maybe.
You know?
Right. And maybe the Niners will look like crap.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many times we need to learn this lesson that these teams, what you saw them do last week does not mean they'll do it this week.
It's all matchups.
Right? If they were going to do that, betting would be easy.
The old show, NFL matchup, was called NFL matchup for a reason because it's all about the matchup. And think about what we saw on Sunday with the Niners defensive line and Yetur Gross-Matos with 3 sacks. He had 4.5 sacks as his career high previous, and he had 3 in a game, and the D-line had 7 as a unit without Nick Bosa. So if you want to look at that, then you say, okay, the group is ready. They're ready to roll. They're going to make life miserable for Matthew Stafford. Well, it's about matchups, and the Bears' offensive line is not as good as the Rams' offensive line. So can the Niners' D-line take what they did against Chicago and build on that, even without Nick Bosa? Can they make things uncomfortable for Matthew Stafford?
Or does Nick play? We don't know that he's not going to play. You know, I know John Lynch said publicly today, like, Garendo didn't practice today, but he said publicly, Garendo's got a shot. He got a shot now.
Yeah.
He got a shot to play. And that he, the player, is really trying to convince the Niners that he can go in this one. And why wouldn't he? I mean, this is his big chance.
Yeah.
I get it. I get it that Isaac is probably absolutely desperate to get on the field. Hey, before we get to the Warrior trade stuff, it's Tuesday, and the Niners played last week. You know what that means.
Is it Granny's Grades?
Let's go.
How did the 49ers grade out this week? Did they pass? Did they fail? Let's find out. It's time for Grandy's Grades on Willard and Dibs.
We finally get to do one of these after a win, after a dominant
win. Somebody might get better than a C-. Yeah. I'm excited.
A lot of them. Yeah. A lot of them, actually. We'll start, as always, at the quarterback position. Brock Purdy did not play the whole game at quarterback because the Niners were up by so much that Brandon Allen came in. And he threw an interception, by the way. But Brock Purdy was very good in this football game, efficient as he has been all year. Maybe underthrew a couple of passes, so I can't give him an A+, but it was an A performance for Brock Purdy on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I don't do A+s, but if I did A+s, I probably wouldn't give him one for the same reason. It wasn't so much the Garendo underthrow, because that was just a beautiful blooper throw that he made. It was the one to Juwan where if he could have stepped into that one, that would have been a touchdown. Garendo caught the one and rolled about 6 yards to the 1-yard line, but those are throws that are just spectacular, especially the Garendo one. I can't wait to ask Cosell about that, because I think that was one where he changed the play at the line of scrimmage, and he got Garendo one-on-one, and that was just an unbelievable throw.
So what grade are you settling on?
An A.
Oh, that's, you're giving him an A.
An absolute A, yeah.
Okay. Everybody mark today down. Write it down. I am
down
gonna
on
give
Rock?
Brock Purdy the lowest grade of the group.
It's crazy.
What is happening right now?
Whoa! What's wrong with you?
I'm not ready to give him an A because of this and this alone. And it'll be, you want to call it an A minus B plus. Brock was fantastic. I'm not taking that away. And I'm not bothered by a couple missed throws. I'd argue we're the only fan base in America that their quarterback can go 20 of 25, go for over 300 yards, not turn the ball over, win by three touchdowns, and we show up Monday morning and we can remember all five incompletions and we are mad about them. It's really stupidity. It really is, in my opinion. However, I'm not bothered by the incompletions. I'm bothered by one of the completions. And he can't do this. Do you remember the play very early in the game where he was rushed right in his face and he threw sidearm underneath the defenders, the play that popped straight up in the air?
Juwan got it.
And Juwan got it. You can't do that. That's the crap that turns into pick sixes. And you've got to find a different way to have that jailbreak, get rid of the ball thing instead of throwing it into a collection of arms. It's what he did in Minnesota and turned into a pick, and you lost the game by six. That's the play that I would love to see Brock get rid of. And for me, I knock him down a few points for it.
Wow. Harsh.
All right?
That's rough.
That's that.
That's rough.
You don't come into my grade book.
Up next, skill positions. That's wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends. George Kittle was obviously incredible in this game. Juwan Jennings had a couple of touchdowns. Isaac Garendo, before he got hurt, was getting over five per carry. Even Patrick Taylor came in, had himself a touchdown in the fourth quarter. Deebo Samuel wasn't impressed once again. Ricky Pearsall had a hold that took away a touchdown, also slipped on a route. Overall, four skill positions, an A minus for the group.
I'm going to give them an A. I was not bothered by Deebo Samuel's performance. I didn't see anything. For instance, again, like if he gets tackled a yard behind the line of scrimmage, I don't blame Deebo for that. There were no drops. There's going to be a miscommunication here or there. I'm certainly not going to get on someone for slipping on natural grass. What I saw were skill position players that made all the plays that were available. The team moved up and down the field. They got a huge lead early. They held on to it. I really didn't see any of those players do anything that was worth a demerit. I give them an A.
I had an A minus as well, and I like that you pointed out the Pearsall. And also, I'm sorry, but someone's got to say it. Keyshawn Vaughn, you got to do more with your two carries.
Only 2 yards of carry. Not
acceptable.
Great. Yeah, not great.
Yeah.
Up next is the offensive line. Interesting because they were down to both their second string left tackle and left guard to begin the game. And then Ben Bartsch goes down. So the Niners down to their third string left guard for the majority of this game. But all in all, it was still a relatively successful day for the O-line. They opened up holes in the run game all game long. I felt Brock Purdy was pressured still a decent amount, even though the sack numbers weren't there for the Bears defense. A B plus for the offensive line.
Yeah, I gave him an A minus because of everything you said. The one that kind of got me is when Brock took that absolutely massive hit in the fourth quarter, where he was kind of tangled down low and then he got bent all the way back. That was a scary, scary hit. But you're right, Grandy, they didn't have what they had one sack, I think, on the day, and the offensive line only had a couple of penalties. So I thought it was one of their best games overall. And you mentioned the Ben Bartsch injury, and he was already the backup, so you had to go even deeper. Spencer Burford sighting, and he came in and did pretty well. It was a good game for the O-line.
Yeah, I give him an A. Again, like I just don't think it's fair to look at an offensive line and be like, there was a sack. Like, I mean, you can't win every single individual battle throughout the game. What I saw as a collective was Brock Purdy had time. He had time a lot. The running backs had holes. Like, largely they did their... I look for two things with the offensive line. Does the quarterback have time, and did you not commit penalties? And for me, both of those were A-level work. So, yeah, the big guys get an A from me.
Let's switch over to the defensive side of the football. We begin with the front seven. That's the defensive linemen and the linebacking core. If I can split this up into two groups, I thought the D-line was absolutely awesome in this game. Of course, you had Yetur Gross-Matos, who had three sacks. You had Leonard Floyd, who had two sacks. Even Malik Collins from the interior with a sack as well. I wasn't overly impressed with what the linebacking group did, so the front seven as a whole gets an A, but that is buoyed by an incredible performance by the D-line.
Yeah, I'm gonna move that down a little bit. B plus, because like you said, like I just, first of all, the defense gave up 2 yards in the first half. So we can say that largely everybody was doing their job, but I am much more impressed by the defensive line. And look, they don't have their best pass rusher, so I acknowledge that too. But there, I also think that some of the success the D-line had was because of young player mistakes by Caleb Williams. I think a more experienced quarterback doesn't get sacked nearly as many times. They did have time to get rid of the ball in a lot of cases. So some of those were coverage sacks or young quarterback sacks. But it's all nitpicking. But yeah, B-plus for me for that group.
So far, this grade book is like my kids' grades in high schools. It's straight A's right now. Today, for the front seven, 7 sacks, and Caleb Williams didn't have a chance to beat you with his legs. And also, it needs to be said that Devondre Campbell had probably his best game as a 49er. Devondre Campbell, again, played very well. He had 7 tackles as a linebacker, didn't make any real coverage mistakes. The front seven was awesome in this game. It's an A.
I thought there was one moment where Caleb Williams was able to break a tackle of Fred Warner. I don't know if you saw after the fact when Caleb Williams spun around him. The two were kind of jawing after the fact. It wasn't Fred Warner's best game either, but we know he's playing with a broken ankle. Up next is the secondary. Good to see Talanoa Hufanga back. Made a couple of plays, playing with the club on his hand. That was fun to see. And then there was a moment in the second half where Malik Mustafa goes out and he was shaken up for a little bit, and Jair Brown had to come back in, and Jair Brown immediately gets beat over the middle for a Rome Odunze touchdown, his second. Odunze also beat Mooney Ward for a very nice touchdown in the back right corner of the end zone. Secondary was good, not great. A B for me for the secondary.
That's the letter that I had in mind. It was nothing disastrous, but a couple of touchdowns for Rome Odunze, and I am now officially in the uncomfortable zone with Jair Brown.
Yep.
And that's terrifying, because Hufanga gets hurt a lot, and it's a young group, and they've suffered injuries and all kinds of problems in that group. And so their depth at that position is severely challenged right now. And to know that they're going to constantly be one play away from relying on him is a scary thought. He's had a very poor season, and it was not a great game there. But the rest of the group was really strong.
Yeah, A-minus for me. Only 2 mistakes in the plays that you pointed out. They had no explosives in the pass game. They had no completions for more than 20 yards. And Jair Brown gets beat by Rome Odunze for the touchdown, but we already were in garbage time mode, so plays are going to happen against your secondary. Other than that, they were spectacular. You mentioned Hufanga and Mustafa in run support, again, rolling up. I thought the defense was so aggressive and so strong early in the game, and that was the secondary as well. In run support, I gave him an A-.
Yeah, first half especially, man, they were so good everywhere. Up next is special teams, and surprise, surprise, worst grade of the day goes to special teams. A C- for me. I know there wasn't anything terrible, but you had multiple penalties on kickoffs, and this is still a group that just cannot get out of its way with making simple mistakes that almost few other teams in the NFL make on a consistent basis.
I wasn't as offended as a C-, but I will go C+, because as you said, there's no disaster, but Kyle Shanahan addressed it today. If anybody wants to know why Jake Moody twice couldn't get his kickoffs to the 20-yard line, you want to know what he said? Just straight shanked him. He shanked him. He shanked a ball that's not moving with nobody rushing him. He shanked him, and he did it twice. We are officially, I know a lot of you have already been there for a while, we are officially in the I do not know about Jake Moody zone, a third-round draft pick just a year ago. It's leaning in the wrong direction with regard to Jake Moody right now, in my opinion.
Special teams had a great game relative to what they've done all year. I gave
That's
them a
true.
B.
That's a low bar.
They have a new punter. Mitch Wishnowsky will not be back as the punter. Pat O'Donnell is a better punter. He's more consistent, and he was able to pin Chicago inside the 10-yard line again. The Jake Moody kickoff is a bit of a curiosity. I think one of them, he was trying to bounce it, and he didn't get it to the kicking zone. But other than that, Jacob Cowing was fine on punt returns, didn't fumble. And I know I'm setting the bar extraordinarily low, but this is what we've had all year. I gave him a solid B.
Fair enough. If you're grading on a curve, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And last but not least is coaching, I'll be quick. They finally break their streak of me giving them Fs and A for the coaching staff. Saw some creativity. I saw the juice from the opening kickoff from the very beginning. This was a well-prepared team. It was a well-coached game. Shanahan going for it on fourth and short. Shanahan making the right calls on two of his three challenges. A good game from Shanahan.
And even at that, when he challenged the spot, he probably knew he was going to lose, but he was going to call timeout anyway. So you might as well challenge it. You're going to call timeout to set the right play or make sure that you know what you're going to do on fourth down. So even that one didn't bug me. And guess what? They ran screens, Mark. They ran a couple of screens. They ran a couple of draws. I've been waiting all year for that. Shanahan had a great day of calling plays. And, you know, give Sorensen credit. His defense came out and they were revved up.
I co-sign on it all. I've said a couple times, Kyle Shanahan's best play calling day of the year. And while Nick Sorensen still didn't get too creative, he was right, at least in this one, that he didn't have to. So I'll co-sign on that and give the coaching staff an A. Good stuff, Grandy. Good stuff. All right. We're presented by Fremont Bank.
Thanks.
We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. All right. Coming up, what Warrior trade do you want to see? There's a lot of rumors out there. We'll share all of them with you. Which one do you want to see? Plus, we think that a Warrior player is going to be on the air with us from Houston within the next half hour. So stay tuned for all that. It's Willard and Dibs.
I want to be a real boy.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
What do you like? Come on. What do you like? What do you like? Sit down at our beautiful establishment. Here's the menu. Let me give you a few minutes to look that over,
okay.
Sir.
All right.
But can I get you anything to drink to get you started while you look that over? Do you need anything to drink?
It's a little tea. A little tea with honey.
Yeah, you do need some tea. Yeah. No, you're doing better.
Better.
Great. Let's drink.
Starting
Perfect.
To fade a little bit here late in the show, but I'm trying to hang in there.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. I'll order a Manhattan.
Just one.
Just one.
Yeah.
Just one.
Just the one.
And we're going to drink it slow.
Yeah.
Slow. Okay?
That boy.
All right. And then let's open up the menu.
All right.
All right. On your left, you will see today's specials. We have Jimmy Butler with a béarnaise sauce.
Man.
With mixed vegetables.
Expensive.
Exactly. And then down below that, you'll see LeBron James and his son.
Man, I don't have the appetite for that. That sounds really filling to me. And would you really have to get them both?
That's a stupid rumor that is circulating.
Because he has a no-trade clause.
Correct. And
one of only, I think, three players in the association?
It's LeBron. He already forced a team to draft his son. Why wouldn't he do that, too? And keep in mind, and we can go through all of this, if LeBron's going to be traded from L.A., it's because he wants to. Not because the Lakers want it, and not because the Warriors want it, because LeBron wants it. But let me tell you, I'm not just throwing that out there willy-nilly either. The reporters have been discussing it. Windhorst, Wilbon, Stephen A., everybody's addressed it. And just because it's on a debate show does not mean it's real. But Windhorst is a reporter. And here's what I have learned through the years with LeBron James. If LeBron wants it to happen, so does the NBA. And it happens.
Yeah.
Like, prove me wrong. What does he want? I don't want Wiggins. I want Kevin Love. Done. I want Miami. I want Bosch. I want Wade. I want my... Done. I would like to go back to Cleveland. Done. I'd like to go to L.A. now. I'm ready for my post-career. Great. Now you're in L.A. And oh, by the way, I'd like you to draft my son with your second round pick. And let's actually put him in a real game right away. A
couple of them, yeah.
As a rookie.
Yeah.
These things have all happened. If LeBron sees the Lakers as no longer a potential for him to win, and he believes that the Warriors are, he will twist people's arms. And the Warriors already called on it once.
Right.
We know this. So
easier to do last year when you had a lot more salary that you wanted to shed than you do now.
Correct.
And I'm just looking at LeBron, and you can't put it in the trade machine because he has a no-trade clause.
Correct.
But he makes 48.7, and the Warriors can't take on any additional money, so they'd have to part with 48.7. So you start to add, well, DeAnthony Melton at 12.8,
okay,
and Wiggins at 26, so now we're at $39 million.
I think you need GP2, and you're just about there.
$48 million.
Yep.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to give LA three or four first round picks.
I don't know.
Two or three first round picks.
I don't know.
And a pick swap.
I don't know. I actually think the pick thing is going to be a higher price in maybe some other spots,
yep,
where they would have a lot of options. Again, if the Lakers want to trade LeBron, I don't even know that there would be a market for it outside of the Golden State Warriors. And again, it only happens if he wants, therefore he goes exactly where he wants.
True.
So
true.
You're not, I don't know how hard of a bargain you're driving.
But if you're the Lakers, you probably want Kuminga instead of GP2, honestly.
But for you, you don't get him.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like
the Lakers don't have to trade LeBron James.
They do if he tells them to.
Well, they can just ice him. They don't have to trade him just because he wants to be traded.
You don't know the way the Lakers do business.
I do.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, you know far better than I do, Lakers are not the same Lakers that you remember when you were there. It's a different organization now.
I'm looking at their behavior since LeBron has gotten there, and I think that Jeannie Buss and everybody involved is doing things exactly the same way. If LeBron says, trade me, he's gone before he gets to the word me. I'm telling you. They will do what their star tells them to do.
Appreciate it.
Especially this star. So anyway, that's the left side of the menu.
Sure.
Over here on the right is non-star stuff, but potentially useful stuff.
Yeah, like tapas, smaller bites.
The three
shared
names.
Shared plates.
Yeah, the three names that came out today with regard to the Brooklyn Nets, and this absolutely was reported by Shams and others, as somebody who the Warriors are interested in, or a group of people that the Warriors are interested in. You've got Cam Johnson, Brooklyn Nets, not to be confused with Cam Thomas.
Yeah,
turns out they are two different people.
And or Cam Newton, that.
Or Cam Newton,
or Cameron Brink, who plays for LA.
Correct.
The Sparks.
I definitely wouldn't have confused them with her. But anyway,
I'd rather have her than Cam Thomas if we're ranking our Cams. But go ahead. Even though she's coming off the ACL.
Yeah, but Cam Thomas is just not what I would call a warrior.
He's Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole.
I don't know if he's that.
He's just a volume scorer and a volume shooter.
Not a good defender, right. Yes. I don't know if he's that cocky.
I don't know if he falls down all the time.
I don't know if he falls down all the time. I don't know if he gets under the skin of his teammates, whatever. But anyway, be that as it may. Cam Johnson, great 3-and-D guy. I think a phenomenal fit. It appears director of sports Lucas Alexander may actually have a crush on him. It's that intense.
League Pass Luke is back.
Thank you. And then there is Dorian Finney-Smith. That is also a little bit of a 3-and-D guy. A little bit more 3 than D. But that's somebody, you watched him with the Mavericks in years past. He can knock down a three-pointer. And then there's Dennis Schroeder, who, and this is sort of, this is a Chris Paul vibe to me, because Dennis Schroeder is not my favorite basketball player, but would I welcome him on the Warriors in this moment at this time? My gosh, he really fits. And I know I buy what some said on this station earlier today with regard to a backcourt of Schroeder and Curry is tiny. But I also think you got to think about this, not just necessarily the final 5 minutes of the game, because I don't even know if he would necessarily always be in there for the final 5 minutes of the game. But this is somebody who in spots could help set up Steph Curry when he's in off-the-ball mode, and be on the floor when Steph Curry is not on the floor. I think that would be his main role. So That's the rumor that hit today. And I do think that there are two sort of different trade talks that the Warriors are exploring. There's the big fish thing. That's the view from 10,000 feet. And then there's the right now thing, which is we need someone to do what D'Anthony Melton was supposed to do on this team, because right now we don't have it.
Yeah.
So there's your menu. What do you like?
Well, I'd like to start my meal with Dennis Schroeder. Let's just do a Melton for Schroeder, which according to the NBA trade machine, it works straight up. Now, you probably have to give Brooklyn a little something, even though Schroeder is going to be expiring, as is Melton. Melton's not playing. And if you're Brooklyn, your goal right now is to shed salary. They are rebooting. They want to start this thing over. And if they can save a little bit of money, then they'll save money. But you probably need to sweeten it with a pick. So maybe it's a couple of second-round picks. And, you know, second-round picks in the NBA aren't really worth that much. So you could part with a couple of picks and get Schroeder for Melton. And I'll start my meal with that. And then, as we get closer to the deadline, we can talk about an entree. And my entree would be Cam Johnson, a guy who can do a lot of the things that you need a player to do on this team.
Well, why, if you're going to the same team, why are we ordering at two different times?
Because
why
am I taking two trips? You may get to that spot and you may realize that you don't need it anymore, as opposed to making a big, bold play now, which I think would involve Jonathan Kuminga. And I was reading reports earlier about Brooklyn, and Brooklyn's not just going to give away players without getting a real compensation package back.
Right, but what they're going to want, again, if you watch what Brooklyn has done, largely, yes, they do bring in some young players, but they have a truckload of draft picks. And we got to remember that when we're talking about Warrior trade possibilities, because I understand that at times we'll throw something out and you'll be like, why the hell would the other team do that? Of course they're going to want Kuminga. Well, maybe, but understand that if you want Jonathan Kuminga, it means that you're about to break somebody off $35 to $40 million, potentially, depending on how that player comes in and plays. And that may not be what the team wants to do. The team may actually want financial flexibility and draft assets. And so, I don't know. There might actually be teams who find Andrew Wiggins to be more attractive than Kuminga, because Kuminga, soon enough, one way or another, is going to make more than Andrew Wiggins for a longer period of time. So, I don't know that Kuminga, for all of these potential teams, I don't know that he's actually the top prize. It could be the picks that are attached to these players. It could be the expiring contracts. I mean, that's why Melton is involved in all of these deals.
Right.
He will play 0 minutes for the acquiring team. But he's attractive because it's $13 million almost off the book.
Yeah. Just running this through the trade machine, Wiggins and Melton for Cam Johnson and Dennis Schroeder. It's a green check mark. That actually works in terms of...
Say it again. Listen
Wiggins
up.
And Melton for Cam Johnson and Dennis Schroeder.
All right, let's talk about that.
Well,
I
do like it, and there's a couple things I think that Brooklyn might like about it. One, Andrew Wiggins is a bargain at $26 million. And the other thing is, teams in the NBA have a salary floor. We have to keep that in mind. You can't just go full Oakland A's and, you know, not pay anybody. The salary floor this year is $126 million, and I'm assuming that will go up next year. And next year, if you take Cam Johnson off their books, they're only right now paying $55 million worth of NBA player. Ben Simmons comes off their books, and Bogdanovich comes off, Schroeder comes off. So they're going to have to find some players to actually pay
for sure.
And play.
For sure.
And if you can get Wiggins, Wiggins is he's a good player for $26 million, and he's a guy who's going to outperform that contract, so... He might be, if you don't love Jonathan Kuminga and you don't want to pay him $40 million a year, perhaps Andrew Wiggins is a guy you look at and say, that's a player we'd take on.
Well, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. Twitch and YouTube powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal Financing at the dealer.